Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy Valentine's Day on this Saturday in CCO land. Danny Long back with none other than Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. You will always be connected to the U of M, and aren't you proud of that?
I am really proud of that. It's a wonderful place to work.
It really is. And you got a lot of great colleagues as well. We're glad to hear Julie is back with us here on our Smart Garden Show. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, you know how, if you're a regular listener, you know we tend to get very busy this hour. So we'd love to hear from you. You can call in if you'd like to chat with Julie. Always love to hear your voice. Or send a text if that's easier. And we're already getting those, as you imagine, Julie. 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. Call or text. And Julie will help you out with that particular question you may be on your mind today. Seeing a lot more lawns these days. And I know, that, in fact, there are a couple of texts, Julie, about another shot at dormant seeding. What do you think of that process?
Well, I think you can still dormant seed. And in fact, we're coming up to a time period of weather that's going to have some moisture, at least around the Twin City area. We've got some snow and snow showers, a little even rain predicted. So yes, this would actually be a good time to still dormant seed. The whole gist of dormant seeding is to put down seed when it's too cold for the seed to germinate. So maybe wait a day to do that. Maybe try that on Sunday or Monday, right before that moisture comes. And that helps to work that seed into the soil and create better soil to seed contact. So yeah, you can still do that. It's called frost seeding when it gets this late.
Frost seeding. Very good.
But it's dormant seeding.
And you mentioned when the precipitation comes, I'm looking at that forecast that Al just mentioned. And it looks like Tuesday there's a chance of rain and Wednesday as well. Actually, from the rest starting Tuesday, small chances, but still, it might be, like you said, today, tomorrow, or Monday.
Yeah, some snow showers are great because it covers up the seed. And so this is a good time to do it. I'd wait a couple days because it is going to be, I think, in the 50s today.
Yeah, and tomorrow and Monday. Isn't that something?
Try it Monday after work.
And then to say, gee whiz, we're going to be dropping back to the 30s.
Yeah, there you go. We're on that roller coaster.
Yeah. Has this changed the whole structure? I mean, I think about this warming trend, and some of the weather folks are saying this definitely could be quite a change down there, and there has been already. Does this affect our plants, shrubs, trees, et cetera?
Well, the 20 years that I've been in Extension, this has changed every year a little by little. And I think it's mostly really as a gardener being educated and understanding the life cycle of plants and then paying attention to the conditions that we have, the temperature, the moisture, and understanding, for example, when I should prune my trees, you know, when is that the best time to do that. It hasn't changed a whole lot. But I think that maybe the windows are closing for some things, whereas they're, you know, the time that you have to do things is extending for others. So it's being flexible as a gardener, and it's also being knowledgeable. So that's what we do in Extension, is that we try to provide that knowledge and provide the resources for people to find information online and also to meet up with master gardeners to help advise them on, you know, what they should be doing and when.
I don't know if you even have statistics to look to research, but are more people, because gardening is a huge pastime for a lot of people. It's therapy for good reason.
Yeah.
But are more people, given age and gender, getting into gardening, would you think, or here?
I think so, because we are doing more. We are doing more different kinds of gardening. So whereas somebody may live in a condo or a townhome and they don't have a lot of room, we still promote gardening in containers and also gardening in small shelters like greenhouses, people putting up temporary greenhouses. And these can be very little. They don't have to be huge you know, commercial greenhouses, but people are doing more gardening in different ways. Maybe that's the best way to say it. They're gardening in raised beds, they're gardening in containers. So they don't have to have, you know, 40 acres to have a really nice garden like we used to. And plants are changing too. The industry is releasing, for example, you know, bushier plants, plants that can grow in a container and not, don't need to have a huge amount of space to grow them. And we're also teaching people about vertical growing. So if you're going to grow, for example, let's say you want to grow cucumbers, is to create a trellising system, and it takes up a lot less real estate to grow cucumbers that you can then harvest. So I think we're changing the way we do gardening, learning about lots of different ways to do it and the kinds of plants that we have at our disposal through some of our seed companies and our greenhouses and nurseries are bigger and better than they've ever been and more varied.
I think about, the how things have changed, and think about all of the condos and apartments that are being built.
Yes. Not everybody wants to have a big yard and take care of it, but they still want to grow a variety of plants in the space that they have. And there's community gardens. A lot of people have a community garden plot if they don't have a backyard. And even those people with backyards have community garden plots. But, so it's changing. We have more variety of ways to garden than I think ever before, at least in my experience.
Yeah, I agree. Looking at a text, Julie, that says this: I have rooted and planted dragon wing begonia. Nice. Now they have small flower buds. Am I now in trouble as it is not even spring yet? Will they tire of where they are in a window with low sun, or will they just start to wilt, do you think?
No, they should be fine. If you're concerned about flowering in plants like this that you may be eventually moving outside that maybe you've started, you can pinch those flowers off. And I do that. For example, I have a Mandevilla that I overwinter in my house here, and I always trim it back. I don't let it grow to be the viney plant that you want outside in the summer, because I feel like it's putting too much energy, it's expending too much energy in growing these long, you know, vining stems or flowering. So I'll pinch off the flower buds of some of those plants. There's an awful lot of energy from a plant that goes into creating flowers and ultimately seeding, you know, creating seeds. And it's the natural progression of the plant. So I kind of keep those plants trimmed back. Same with things like geraniums. I might take off some of the flowers so that that plant is putting more energy into creating a good root system and more leaves than it is flowers at this point. Once it's summer and they get outside, you know, they can go nuts. And but I kind of keep them smaller and a little bit less productive indoors just to keep that energy in the root system and in the stems of the plants.
If you have a lawn or garden question, you may phone it in, or you can just send a text, 651-461-9226. Interesting text, I think, Julie, from a listener that says, given the change in the weather patterns, has the zone designation for Minnesota changed?
Well, we had the USDA released a new cold hardiness zone map back in 2023, and it did change some of the zones that we have in Minnesota. There's a number of explanations for that. One is climate change, that things are warming up, but also that we have better and better technology every time this map comes out. So they release these maps about every 30 years or so. Actually, let's see. It was 2012, so maybe every 12 years or so. but there's better technology that actually reads the temperatures. And I think in this last map, it was every half mile they could collect the temperatures. And these are average temperatures for the annual, you know, for the year. This is not, you know, every month or, you know, these are averaged. So we have to expect that temperature, even though it says we're in zone 4, we may have temperatures in zone 5 in the winter for some time, or we might have colder temperatures. So there's always that. It's more of a guideline than it is a rule of thumb. I kind of stick to my zone 4. I'm in zone 4 and still in zone 4 here in Mound. And so I will stick to that and grow plants. But it's always kind of fun to try plants from other zones too. Sometimes people will experiment and put a zone 5 in a protected area of their yard and see if they can get it to grow. So it's a guideline, and it comes out, as I said, every 10 or 12 years, and it's an average of annual cold temperatures.
All right. Interesting. Well, thanks to the text for sending that. Call us again. Call or text your lawn or garden questions for Julie, 651-461-9226. As we head to a quick break, we have more to come. 32 now. We've gone from 28 to 32 in 1 hour, and we are on our way to near 51 today, near 49 tomorrow, near 50 on the holiday and Washington's birthday come Monday. Then maybe a chance of rain the middle of February. Again, fair skies, 32 degrees here on Valentine's Day from News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to our Smart Garden.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back, and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Garden Show, Danny Hall here, along with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Back answering those lawn and garden questions this Valentine's Day. I don't think I wished you a happy Valentine's Day, Julie. Shame on me.
Well, happy Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Chocolate's on the way. All right. You know what else? We also have a phone caller that you need to help out. All Diane right. has been hanging on the line from Wyoming, Minnesota. Thanks for your patience, Diane. What is your question?
Yes, I received an amaryllis as a gift, and I've grown them before and not had a problem. But this one, after I potted it, and it started to grow, and it grew, and it has grown 25 inches tall.
Wow.
And it looks like it's about ready to open. But according to the, I got it as a gift, and according to the information with it, it should get several flowers on it. This is not going to get another flower. I'll just get one. Can you tell me what happened?
Well, first of all, the size of it. I have one like that in mine, too. I have a number of different amaryllis, and some are really short, and some are really tall, and that's just the variety of the plant. And it is, like yours, probably about 25 inches tall and about to open. Sometimes they'll open a single bud, but there might be multiple flowers that emerge from that space. You don't need to have a bud for one flower. In other words, you know, you've had them before, and the flowers can, you can have 3 to 5 flowers off of a single bud. So that's encouraging. I don't think anything really happened. I think it's just, you know, that's just the nature of that particular plant. What I would do with it, and maybe you do this already, is once it's done blooming, you just trim off that stem and grow it as a house plant. Sometimes you get a second bud that comes out of that bulb. But then in the summer, when it's warm enough outside, put it outside in kind of a semi-sunny location and grow it outside as a house plant outside on your deck or patio. And that allows that plant to really photosynthesize through the summer, get a lot of energy, goes back into that gigantic bulb. And then I am a believer of the dormant of letting that plant go dormant from about September through maybe December, putting it in a dark, cool location. You stop watering it. The leaves dry up and fall off. And then taking it out. You know, I usually do mine after New Year's because we have Christmas tree and stuff around. And then put it in a sunny location and start watering again. And again, you maybe have done that since you've grown amaryllis before. But we have a great webpage on amaryllis, too. But again, I think in your case, it's just the nature of that particular variety. And maybe next year, if it has a summer outside, it will have a little bit more energy and put out more buds.
All right. Very good. Thank you for the call. Getting back to some text questions, Julie, is it still okay? Texter wants to know to prune apple trees, or is it too late?
No, it's a good time to do that. And I'm glad somebody asked that because we do have page on trees and shrubs and caring for those trees and shrubs, and one on pruning and time to prune to avoid diseases. So this is a great time to prune fruit trees. The trees are still dormant. They will recover slowly and get, you know, as they go into the warmer weather. And so it's an excellent time to do that.
Great. What is the best way to water an indoor plant? Texter wants to know, from the top or bottom watering, or does it depend on what kind of a plant?
Oh, good question. Good question. We could have a whole show about watering indoor plants. Mostly, the thing that kills indoor plants most often is overwatering. And it's because people have a tendency to want to water on a schedule, say every Saturday morning while they listen to Smart Gardens.
Very good.
But you really want to water when the plant needs it. And so you do want to feel the soil of those plants. I'm always sticking my fingers in my house plants, and they dry up faster indoors usually, but not always. Sometimes they're in a plastic pot. Sometimes they're in a cooler area of your house. You don't want to overwater it. It causes root rot. And also you want to be sure your pot drains well too. So you don't want plants sitting in water. I know sometimes people think, oh, I'll just put some water in the bottom of my, you know, in the saucer or in another pot that it's sitting in, and it'll just take it up as it needs it. But what happens is it retains that moisture constantly, and that can cause the roots to rot. And that's a number one way that people lose plants is through root rot. If you don't have any roots, you can't take up water, the plant dies. So in this case, the best thing to do is make sure that your plant needs water. So feeling that soil or that media, and then you can water from the top.
Oh, I think we lost Julie. Come back, Julie. Well, we're getting Julie back.
Leaf spots from that.
We lost
hello.
You for a while.
Did I fall off?
You fell.
Goodness
yes.
sakes!
But you're back.
How did that happen? Okay.
I'm not sure.
Did I? Where did I stop?
Well, you can just kind of summarize.
Okay. Feel the soil or the media that the plant is in, and then water it as needed. But don't let it sit in water. How about
okay.
that?
Very good. Glad you're back. This listener wants to plant peach trees this year, but their forever home won't be ready for 2 years. Can they be transplanted without problems?
Oh, let's see. After 2 years, it's going to be a little tough to transplant the trees. So I guess I would probably wait 2 years to plant them at your new house. And at that point, you can amend the soil properly and protect the plant from browsing, from animal browsing.
Yeah.
And I think I would wait. I don't think I would try to transplant them. You could.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it too late to winter seed in milk cartons? Listener wants to know.
So winter seeding, winter sowing, we call it, is done when there are seeds that need a cold, moist condition for a period of time, anywhere from 1 to 3 months. So we're getting down there where it's getting a little bit too late to do that. And so in this case, you may want to wait and do this, plan to do this next year for some of these plants. Maybe you want to buy plants instead of starting them from seed.
Okay. Cindy sent this in. The squirrels are chewing the leaf buds off our buckeye tree. Anything we can do to stop them?
Not really.
No.
At this point, yeah. It's too hard to treat. You can't treat a tree with anything to deter the squirrels. I don't think you want to bag all the buds on the buckeye tree. That's pretty labor intensive, so probably not.
Yeah. Tell you what, Julie, time to take a break and take a look at that weather forecast. It's going to be a warm one. And we'll do that, and we'll have a look at next week's weather as well. So stay with us. We have about another half hour of our Smart Garden Show to go. More pickups on text messages. And, of course, if you want to call in your question, that's great, too. 651-461-9226. This is News Talk 830 WCCO. And if you're just joining...
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson. On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us, Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, answering those particular questions. Julie, we haven't talked, you and I, about the Arboretum in some time.
Yeah.
And it's, again, this season, any season is a great time to get out there.
This is a great time to be out there because the flower show is going on, and it opened on January 31st, so it's been going on for a couple of weeks. And this is a great time. Now the they have all sorts of bulbs that they've forced and amaryllis that are growing amongst really lovely displays. This year the theory is on water quality, on the importance of water. And they've created bogs and streams and all sorts of pools and really interesting displays. More interesting than I've kind of remember. This is really a unique flower show, and I recommend everybody come out to see it. It's really gorgeous, and you can shop at the garden store, at the gift shop, have a great lunch at the Rootstock restaurant. And be sure to take a walk around outside. 51 degrees. It's a perfect day to go out there on Valentine's Day. See the flower show. Hike around the Arboretum. Just a great day to be outdoors and indoors as well.
Absolutely. If not this weekend, this coming week as well. I'm looking at a text, Julie, from a listener that says, how short do we cut our indoor geraniums back?
You can cut them back about a third of the size that they are now. And this is an opportunity, if you're taking them out of storage, you know, where they've been all winter, is to prune them back so that they have a nice form and they start to develop a nice form for summer.
Okay. Referring to your comments of earlier, a texter says, should I trim my begonia back and clip off the flowers?
Those also, you can pinch them back, and they won't be as leggy then when they get outside. They'll get bushier, and you want to do that by trimming off the end tip of that, the terminal buds, and kind of cut it back down to where a leaf node might be, and then trim off those flowers too. That will help get the plant to be more bushy.
Very good.
Produce more leaves.
651-461-9226 if you have a lawn and garden question for Julie. Here's a 45-year-old Chinese rose hibiscus. Have removed all green. It's covered in black flies. Previously had white fly issues. When is it time to say goodbye to a plant?
Well, I really winced when I heard that. So I'm a fan of, not a fan, but I kind of accept the fact that sometimes plants have live their life, and 45 years, that's pretty darn good. And if they're covered with insects, they could also be promoting those insects to other plants. So you might want to say, that's it. You could try spraying it. You could get it outside, put it in a plastic, like a lawn bag, punch a hole in, spray inside there, let it just sit, the spray on that plant. See if that helps. But if that's not what you want to do, then yeah, it might be time for a new one. It's always an opportunity to get a new plant.
Yeah. A listener wanted to know and kind of missed maybe our comments about dormant seeding earlier, but wondering, can you still dormant seed even with some snow on the ground?
Yes, you can. You can dormant seed until you start to see grass growing, and you can put that down. So this is a good time to do that.
All right. A text says this, my ash tree had an aphid problem last year. We had it professionally sprayed. Should we have it done again this year?
Not necessarily. I think I would, this is where you want to be really observing your garden and observing your tree, and you want to be sure that you're observing and seeing how bad those aphids are this year. Just because they were bad last year doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be a problem this year. So just keep an eye on it.
All right. Another text says this, I'd like to start some milkweed pod seeds in an egg carton to see if they'll germinate. They've been in my unheated garage all winter. When approximately should I put the seeds in the potting soil, and when would be the approximate dates to plant them in the ground?
Well, you could start to do that now. They've gone through a stratification, cold stratification it's called. It's a cold period, basically mimics winter. You can do it indoors in your refrigerator. You can put the seeds in the ground in the fall, and they'll go through a natural winter. And that helps to break down some chemicals that then will allow the seeds to germinate. So I think you could probably, they've been in a cold condition all winter, you could try seeding them now. You could also put them into a damp, cold condition, and like your refrigerator, for a couple of weeks, and see if that starts too. Laura put up a really nice a description of this on our Yard and Garden News on our extension site under the February checklist posting. So you might want to take a look at that. She's got some good resources. And then you could look up how to germinate milkweed seeds as well, too. But they need that cold stratification, that cold, moist condition for at least a couple, I think at least a month or so. And it sounds like you've met that condition.
Speaking of Laura, you know what else is fun is those short videos.
Yeah, the hort shorts.
Yeah,
they're great. And she's got a couple of links to those in the February checklist as well. But take a look at it. They're snippets, maybe 2 minutes long, about a really specific topic that we get lots of questions about.
Yeah, get on the web if you haven't checked it out. Mm-hmm. Extension.umn.edu.
Yes.
Great resource. All right, let's grab another phone call. Ed, this time, is calling in from Invergrove. Ed, what is your question for Julie?
Yes, hi. Now that I can see my yard after the snow is gone, I see the voles have just tore up my grass, and I was wondering if there's anything I can do now or if I have to wait till spring pretty much, but there's quite a bit of damage already, lots of them.
Sure. So you could try dormant seeding and putting down some grass seed that's appropriate for your condition, sunny, shady, part shade, part sun, and you could do that now, and that would give you a jump on the season. And then in the spring, as those plants start to germinate and you can see if there's any other patches that have been killed off by the voles, you can go ahead and seed at that point, too.
Okay. This listener said this via text. I have some blue spruce in my backyard. Some of the roots are sticking up out of the ground kind of high. I'm afraid my lawnmower blades are going to hit them and wreck my tractor. Is it okay to grind down those roots to a lower level, or will it kill my tree?
It will kill your tree. Do not do that. The best thing to do is just stop growing grass between those roots and to mulch that area. And then you could plant in some shade perennials. Hostas are great under spruce because they tolerate really dry conditions. And evergreens have that kind of situation. Mulch the trees, mulch over the roots, and let her be.
Okay. Is it okay to rototill the garden soil each spring?
You shouldn't have to do that necessarily. We usually don't recommend tilling every year, but actually just turning the soil up where you're going to be planting. So rather than till everything up, the only time you would do that is if you've done a soil test and found that your soil is lacking in something that needs to be tilled in, like a compost or some kind of a nutrient. So you really don't need to till every year. It can turn up weed seeds from beneath the soil, and once those weed seeds are exposed to light, they can germinate and cause a lot of extra work. So really just determining, I'm going to plant a row of this here and just digging up that row just manually and not really tilling the whole thing.
Okay. As I recall, this is a text that probably missed that earlier question about this is apple trees, and you said you can trim apple fruit trees right now, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
From now till early April.
All right. This listener has an outdoor plant that they brought in last fall and had a watering problem, maybe overwatered it. Now it has large shoots growing out of it. Should I cut them back at this time of year? Doesn't say what kind of a plant it is.
Yeah, it doesn't say. Is it an outdoor plant, do they mention?
Yes.
Okay. I would wait on cutting. You could cut things back now, but just wait until the buds start emerging and start kind of getting fat. And then you can trim it back to a nice fat bud that's going to turn into, a leaf and probably a flower bud. And so not knowing what the plant is a little tricky. If it's a spring flowering plant, trimming back is going to, you're going to sacrifice some flowers, like a lilac, for example. If it's a summer blooming plant, like a spirea, or a weigela or something, you're going to, then you could do some pruning when that plant, just before those buds start to break.
Okay. Listener wants to know, when do you trim juniper?
Junipers and evergreens, and I'll just point out that we do have a Pruning Trees and Shrubs webpage, and it does have specifications on general plants, when to prune. But evergreens, a lot of them can be pruned, especially junipers, pretty much any time of the year up till the middle of summer. So I would wait until spring. till things start to warm up and you start to see some new growth and can see where the plant is actually growing, and then start to head them back. And heading them back, we have some great videos on pruning, and you should be able to get kind of a quick primer on how to do that. But basically, you're kind of trimming the end of the branch back to a growing point, a point where there's another stem growing, some new growth, and that will help to shorten the plant, kind of bring in the width of the plant a little bit, but also then promote growth at that point in which you cut the branch. So take a look at that site. We've got some good apple tree videos, too, for all of you asking about pruning apple trees, and it is on extension.umn.edu. Yard and Garden, and it's under our Trees and Shrubs section. And it's called Pruning Trees and Shrubs.
All right, very good. Well, bear with me, Julie. I'm looking at a text that sometimes when people send text, they write a couple of lines and send it, then they write two more lines and send that. So it's jumped around here, and I have to kind of piece it together. You've seen that.
Yep.
This listener says, and bear with me, I am interested. Having read about bee lawns on the U of M website, I'm interested in having this on the south side of my garage between the bee lawn space and the neighbor's yard to be, this is about 3 feet from the property line and our chain link fence. How easy would it be to spread into my neighbor's lawn is one question. Is there something I can easily place between the bee lawn space and the neighbor's yard to reduce the spread? I guess that's generally
okay.
A question.
Great. So great to try bee lawns. They create a kind of a haven for bees. And there are bee lawn seed mixes. You've probably read about that on our site. At the chain link fence, what I would do, and I don't know how much space you have, but I would create a mulched bed there. I would take out the sod and I would create a mulched bed, and then I would plant vertical plants growing on that chain link fence. Could be vines, for example. And that will do a couple things. It will act as a barrier to bee lawns, to the bee lawns spreading to your neighbors, so that you don't risk, you know, them getting, upset about that if they maybe want to have a different lawn. Plus, it will create a nice, just a nice aesthetic in that space. Chain link fences are great for growing things on, but they're not very attractive if you don't. So vines will grow vertically. There's a lot of different cool vines that you can get out there. I like the honeysuckle vine. That's a beautiful vine. There's also things that are more foliage, like Virginia creeper or Boston ivy, that kind of thing. Well, Boston ivy, that's not going to grow on it because that's different, but Virginia creeper would. You could also grow vertical flowers, like if you like gladiolas or if you like, I'm losing that one. But you could also grow flowers along that. And that would help with the bees as well. That would provide also a haven for bees too. So you'd have the bee lawn and then you'd have a nice row of great flowers that bees like. And you'd be respecting your neighbor's desire not to have a bee lawn if that's the case.
All right. Julie, hang on, please. We'll take a quick break. Be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show. Here in the Twin Cities, we are expecting a high today, if you can believe it. Near 51 degrees, 49 tomorrow with sunshine. A lot of melting. Right now, it's fair and 32 from Newstalk A3O WCCO. And welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M answering those lawn and garden questions today. Great to have Julie back. Julie, bunch of text messages to go. I know we won't get to all of them, but Let's see if we can try.
Lightning round.
Yes, indeed. Texter says, we have a couple of smoke bushes that need pruning. Should we prune them now or can we wait until spring?
Take a look at that Pruning Trees and Shrubs webpage. I know smoke bush is on there. I'm not on that site right now, but take a look at that one. It's under Trees and Shrubs on Yard and Garden.
Yard and Garden. Could over-fertilization cause the loss of flowers on a poinsettia plant? Will the plant come back?
Well, the flowers on poinsettia are the little tiny centers, the little yellow centers, the big leaves, they're bracts actually, that surround them, and we call the blossoms, the ones that are red when we buy them. Those are actually bracts, so that's a little different. Over-fertilization of a houseplant could cause some burning, some drying. Fertilizers are soluble, are salts, and so that could be causing some the plant's not doing very well, might want to back off on that. The other thing you could do, too, if it's looking like the plant is unthrifty, is to repot it, put it in some fresh soil and a clean pot, and just kind of give it a new lease on life. And then be careful with your fertilization of houseplants. You're fertilizing into a contained environment, and so you want to use a very mild fertilizer. I know sometimes they'll call for a teaspoon per gallon or something, but use about half of that or even a quarter of that, and do that regular fertilizing that way.
Okay. What is the best way to give larger pine trees a big boost this spring?
Oh, there are evergreen fertilizers, and we do have a good web page on fertilizing evergreens, also on the trees and shrubs page. Take a look at that. It's important to know what kind of evergreen, if you have spruce or pine or if you have yews. Just determine that and then select an evergreen fertilizer according to the type of plant that you have. You can reach out to your nurseries, local garden centers. The staff there are excellent at helping you select a product.
All right, very good. This listener, Julie, said, I planted a hydrangea tree last fall. It still has some leftover flowers on it. Will they evidently eventually fall and they're brown in color, or do I need to cut them off?
Oh, good question. And we have a great pruning hydrangeas video and a web page about that, too. But these are dead plant. These are dead flower heads. They're spent. And so you will have to prune them off. They might blow off in the wind, but it's better to prune them off and give your plant a nice form, especially in those trees, because you want to have a, you know, they're very prominent. They're great accent plants. And that will give you a chance to kind of give your plant a good shape before it starts to bloom again.
Okay. Good morning. Texture says, I have been growing a blue spruce since it was just inches tall. It's now about 2.5 feet. It's been grown inside all this time. Can I put it out now that it's warming up? I plan to permanently plant it out in the spring.
You should work that. You should start to acclimate that plant in the spring as it really warms up. Now is not the time to do that. So acclimate it when days become, you know, pretty much 50 degrees steady. Move that plant out into a shady location, then a little more sun, and then finally put it into its location that you want to plant it. So it takes a couple of weeks for a plant to acclimate to the outdoors when it's been growing indoors.
Very good. This listener said, we've had good success having monarchs lay eggs on swamp milkweed plants. However, some years aphids descend on them. Is there a way to control them without hurting the eggs and or caterpillars? That comes from Appleton, Minnesota.
Yeah, actually, think of those aphids as food for other insects like lady beetles, praying mantis. It's just kind of the nature of milkweed is that they attract aphids. So I wouldn't recommend spraying anything. Just encourage other insects to be in your landscape. And again, you'll probably see the larvae of lady beetles. They look very different from lady beetles. They're kind of long and caterpillary looking. They're black and orange, kind of spiky. And those are actually the larvae of lady beetles. And we often find those out at the foodscape feeding on the aphids that are on the swamp milkweed. And that's probably the best way to go, is let nature take its course.
Okay. This listener said, I've been seeing a lot of multicolored hosta online. Is this real or a scam? I haven't seen that.
Well, multicolor, I mean, I think variegated at that point.
Yeah.
There's thousands and thousands of varieties and cultivars of hosta. And so I don't think it's a, I don't know, I guess until you buy the plant and see if it's a scam. But there are an awful lot of hosta breeders and people doing crosses all the time. So it's, you could try it out and see if you get scammed, I guess. But
yeah, I've not seen that. All right.
Yeah, I don't know. Hard to
Listener
say.
Says this, I have 5 arborvitae next to each other, 20 feet high. They are starting to send out at the base. Would watering alone help them, or should I fertilize them when they start to show new growth? Also, what fertilizer type should I use?
Yeah, so this goes back to that evergreen fertilizer question earlier.
Yeah.
When you do start to see new growth on plants, that's a great sign to start fertilizing. That includes houseplants, too. If you start to see new buds, if you start to see new leaves, in this case, new leaves on the arborvitae, yeah, great time to go ahead and start fertilizing. It is also a time that you can shear those plants. So if you need to shear them, you want to do what's called a loose shear, not a tight shear. And this is where you just knock off that new growth with your hedge trimmer. Very little bit. You don't have to go deep into the plants. And that allows, that pushes the plant to create a better form and also not get it so tight that you end up with really dense foliage and then, you know, kind of an odd-shaped plant. So pruning evergreens is an important thing to do. And again, we have information on pruning evergreens in that Pruning Trees and Shrubs webpage.
Couple minutes to go on the show, Julie. Here's another text. We have a Canadian hemlock in our garden. It's about 15 feet tall and has 2 leaders growing. Should one of them be cut back?
Ideally, it should have been cut back when it was younger, when it first started to emerge that you had 2 leaders. At this point, you have to look at it and determine, is it going to really harm the form of the tree? A plant with 1 leader is the best form. But you could do, depending on how big that branch is now, you may be able to take off 1 of the leaders.
Okay.
And I have to just take a look at it.
Julie, this text says, my garden consists of 4 whiskey barrels for growing vegetables. How often should I amend or change the soil?
Well, that soil is, that's a great question, by the way, because it pertains to any containers that you're growing in. And that soil will be depleted, especially if you're growing kind of, you know, plants that really take up a lot of the nutrients like tomatoes and fruiting plants. So you can amend it in the spring with some compost. I would also add in a slow-release fertilizer. Brand name, for example, is Osmocote. And I would mix that into that soil because that will help to just feed those new plants that you plant in there little by little over the growing season. And you may have to add, if you have a lot of rain or if you water a lot, you may have to add a little more of that fertilizer maybe halfway through the summer.
Okay, very good. Well, Julie, let's put out another reminder, folks. This is a great weekend and this coming week to, first of all, get to the Arboretum, right?
Right, yeah. Perfect day, perfect weekend to walk outside, take a walk around the 3 Mile, all the gardens. And then also the flower show is going on. So, and there's a lot of educational opportunities at the Arboretum as well. So be sure to take a look at the education page. The Arboretum webpage is arb.umn.edu. You do need a ticket on weekends to get in. So basically it's helping to kind of spread out the crowds. So,
sure.
So go ahead and you can get on the arb.umn.edu and you can get a ticket there.
All right, Julie, thanks so much. And get on that university website, extension.umn.edu.
Yes.
Happy Valentine's Day, Julie.
Happy
we will
Valentine's
talk soon.
Day, Denny.
Thanks
yeah.
so much.
Bye.
Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Now get those questions for Luke Panic, the deck guy from Linda's Construction. We'll talk others too, but if you have a deck question, next hour on CCO.
Hey, friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of The Preamble. Listen, I know you're dealing with a lot, and it's even harder to do it when the world around you feels chaotic. But I'm here to help. Each week, my expert guests and I slow things down to talk about the stories shaping our world, what's really happening behind the headlines, why it matters, how it all connects. And if you're ready for real understanding and maybe even a little bit of hope, follow and listen to The Preamble wherever you get your podcasts.